Bradley Jagheiger, home from your world travels to the yes. cosmopolitan spot of Michigan. How did it go, my friend?
The thumb of Michigan, Nola. If you know anybody from Michigan, they can always show you where they live on their hand. We were right up in the tip of the thumb of Michigan, and my Philadelphia.
And as anyone will tell you, the tip of the thumb is where you want to be in Michigan. That's where the who's who goes. That's the spot.
That's the place to see and to be seen. It is without question. And my Philadelphia raised children got a first in their life. They got to be taken to a county fair. That was a big deal. They got to go on rides on rides that were hastily assembled in the middle of the night by meth heads, and that's unfair for me to say. I'm sure there was a few fine upstanding heroin users, but they were you know, if you've ever gone to a county fair, you know exactly what I'm talking. We saw one guy. Do you know what the zipper is? If you've ever ride these carnival rides, you know what the zipper is?
Yeah, the zipper is always the one when you read the local newspaper. It's like four dead on zipper at county fair.
Yes! And this thing, look it up. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. This thing is a ridiculous ride. You're spinning around in 180 degrees as this thing whirls you in a circle. And it's as there's people waiting for this ride, there's a guy opening up one of the units that people sit in, one of the little carts, one of the carriages, and he's wailing on the inside of it with a ball peen hammer. Pang, pang, pang. And then he, like, does something to adjust something. Nope, still not right. Pang, pang, pang. This goes on for, as we're waiting for the bumper cars, equally stupid ride to go on, you know, for neck injuries. As we're waiting for the bumper cars, this guy takes 5 minutes as these three young tween girls are waiting perfectly serenely, like there's nothing wrong with this, waiting to get on this ride that's going to spin them into the stratosphere. And he's wailing the shit out of it with this hammer. And all of a sudden, they're looking at it in complete horror. But the funny part, the part I got to tell you about is that we've gone to the county fair before, or we've talked about the county. We actually never gone to it because in the past, my wife has been with us when we make these Michigan trips. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to join us this time. And in the past, my wife's like, we're not even going to the fair. Those rides are dangerous. We're not going. Forget about it. And this year, she wasn't able to go. And so we're at the fair, and my plan was just to go and see the animals and, you know, play a few of the games and do, you know, get the food, the cotton candy, blah, blah. And we're posting these Facebook pictures of the kids at the fair, and my wife sends me a text, and she goes, let Max go on the rides. And I go, it was almost like, can we afford to lose one? But Max is the only one that really likes to ride rides. Alex isn't a ride rider so much, right. But Max really loves it. So she goes, let Max ride the rides. It's a cultural experience.
A cultural experience?
I can show you the test. It's a cultural experience. And so I decided to...
Let your son experience what idiots experience.
So I'm like... Okay, and I'm buying him his $18, you know, one bracelet that lets you ride all of the rides. As I'm ponying up for this, I realize that it really didn't have anything to do with the hastily constructed rides. It's just the fact that she wasn't there to see it. And more importantly, like if he stumbles off of the tilt-a-whirl and you know, barfs up all of his cotton candy, she doesn't have to deal with that.
Although, you know, there's a marked difference from what a dad will let their kids do versus any sort of semblance of logic and reason of when the wife is around, in the sense that, like, if I'm by myself at the zoo, it's like, wrestle the bear, $1. Come on, kids. Everybody gets to wrestle the bear. My wife would be like, no, we're not letting the children wrestle the bear. And I'd be like, come on, it's only $1. That's not that bad. It's not that expensive. She's like, no, we're not letting them wrestle the bear.
It's not about the money. Yeah. It's about the claw marks in their foreheads we've got to explain later.
Exactly. So let me ask you a quick follow-up question. So the bracelet for All You Could Ride was $18.
Yeah.
How much meth in Michigan can you buy for $18?
Well, let me tell you that I had to buy an $18 wristband. I had to buy $10 worth of tickets for my other son who wanted to go on the, you know, smaller level rides. And I was already planning on buying cotton candy and French fries. As I was telling the lady in the ticket counter that, she just kept like rubbing the inside of her arm. She just was rubbing. And I didn't know what that.
Right. Just scratching at the track marks. We get it, Brad. Good job. it's funny though, like if you were finger snapped from any other country and brought to an American county fair, that is what is that image of Americana in a county fair? Because the food is like, look what we were able to fry. Like, look, here's a Walmart sock. We were able to fry that. Would you like to eat that?
Here's something we can immerse in bubbling oil. Would you like to eat it?
Exactly. The fact that somebody was like, could we – now, just hear me out. I'm going to finish the sentence. Could we conceivably fry a Snickers bar? Can we get the Snickers bar? You know what? I think we can.
As a matter of fact,
I think we can do it.
In fact, they had a place selling them, as a matter of fact.
God damn it.
The other part of Americana that you really owe it to yourself to see is the animal, the livestock. You guys didn't grow up in rural areas. Do you know what FFA is?
This sounds like an acronym and I don't want to know, but go ahead. What is
it? No. It's Future Farmers of America. And it's a youth group. It's a youth group for kids that live in rural areas, and they can do all kinds of things. And then at the county fair, they can compete. The county fair is like the Super Bowl for the FFA. And there's kids there that will raise an animal from birth, like a calf or a piglet or a chicken or a goose, and they will raise it and then they'll bring it to the fair. They bring a camper. They spend all week at the fair. And they'll bring their animal, they'll clean it up, and then the animal competes with the other animals to see which one gets a blue ribbon and a red ribbon and everything else, all of which culminates in the auction. And they bring their and you've never seen such a clean pig. They polish up these animals, right? And they trot them in there, and then people are auctioning. They're bidding per pound how much they will buy this animal. And this kid that has worked.
Wait a minute. I just realized where this ends up. I don't like where this story is going, Brad.
You see these 12 and 13-year-old kids that have raised an animal since birth.
Tell me that Wilkins is not going to have a bad fate.
But it's really amazing because, like, at $2.50 a pound, some of these kids stand there at the auction and earn like $1,000 for Jeez. All the works they put in. If you get a heifer or a big pig, these things can. And there's a kid that stands there beaming with pride. I've just earned $1,000 with my own two hands. And they stand there and just like I said, their face beaming with pride. And then you watch that face slowly melt away as the horror of, I just sentenced my pet to become pork chops. Oh my God. It's amazing. That's Americana for you there.
That's also, what a nutshell of the farmer's life too. It's just like, here's $1,000, but you got to say goodbye to waffles.
No, I don't want to say goodbye to waffles. I love waffles. But I do like $1,000.
And then to really give that poor kid a taste of their future, they're like, okay, now here's your $1,000 and here's the $40,000 you owe the bank. Good luck being a farmer.
Yeah, exactly.
That hits a little too close to home for most of the Midwest.
Here's your feed bill.
20 states in the Midwest. All right, well, Brad, it is time to welcome everybody. We've been hammering on about the joys of the thumb of Michigan, and Lord knows I could go for hours on that. But it's time to welcome everybody and say hi. Welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics
and making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I'm Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Sheldon and Drive and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. And Dave, who's that sitting next to you?
Well, I have to tell you, she has been sitting patient and quiet like a church mouse over here. It's Dylan McConis of Portland, Oregon, down visiting with her lovely wife, and she has been delightful to have in the house, and we thought we would podcast it up this morning.
Yeah, welcome, Dylan. I've been doing a lot of sword fighting with pool noodles with Dave's children.
A lot of pool noodle battling. And so she's going to be joining us today to talk about all sorts of questions that we've gotten from Patreon backers, Brad.
Your Patreon noodles.
But before we get into any of that, I want to direct everybody to your local comic book shop, because I picked it up at San Diego Comic-Con, and you can pick it up at your local comic book shop. It's Long Con. It is a post-apocalyptic story of a... Well, I'll let Dylan give the pitch.
You're going to make me do it.
I'm going to make you give the pitch. That's always the worst your own work.
This is the easiest book pitch I have ever come up with, and it's such a relief to pitch it. The idea is that the apocalypse strikes during a giant Comic-Con, and everybody is trapped inside for 5 years. The outside world continues to exist, but it's pretty raggedy, but everybody inside believes that civilization has been wiped out. So warring tribes begin to form among fandoms. The ruling sci-fi franchise has turned into a kind of fascist regime. There's a superhero ghetto. There are dissident tribes of cosplayers, feral service dogs.
Feral service dogs. I forgot about
that. Oh, yeah. That was a key gag for me. In pitching the series,
is it like, the packs have gone wild?
Yeah, yeah. All those nice, good dogs that roam the convention floor.
Still with remnants of their service dog jacket on.
I told our artist, Emily Denich, I was like, there needs to be some dogs with a tattered vest still on.
Please don't pet me. I'm a service dog. Meanwhile, they got a human arm in their mouth.
I did a doodle of that where it like had a bloody maw, and the editors were like, we have to pull that back.
Rein it in a little bit. So, Brad, you are now home from the thumb of Michigan, and next you go to Alabama. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, we get at the end of this week. And as a matter of fact, we hit the road Friday. We're taking my youngest son. It's just going to be he and I, just a road trip between the two of us. We take him down to Huntsville, Alabama for NASA Space Camp. He's going to learn to be an astronaut for a week. And like I was saying earlier before we started recording, it's a great week because he has a fantastic time. Plus, I get a little hotel at like an extended stay hotel. And I set up my work area and I just crank out work for 5 straight days where I've got nothing distracting me and I get a ton of work done. So I'm looking forward to having 14 hours of just father-son time and then 5 days of just unblocked work time.
Yeah.
That sounds like bliss.
Isn't that funny that all
I don't even have children and that sounds like bliss.
All three of us are just like, well, unblocked work time, just no one bothering you.
Yeah.
Just and it's, I get a little in the background.
I get a little kitchenette, and so I eat all the crap food that I used to eat when I was a bachelor. I get 3-4 packages of Kraft mac and cheese, all the crap, and just eat horrible food, take out and work blissfully. It was great last year. I hope it lives up this year.
I love the idea that if there was like an imaginary bar graph showing your likelihood for type 2 diabetes, like this single stay at this hotel,
just a spike.
Eating Alabama like fried pig ears and macaroni and cheese is just spiking this week. Just it's very much in the red, the type 2 diabetes.
Oh, well that's I'm a little nervous about that. I never feel heavy until I go home. And then I see myself in these, because I was really skinny growing up, and I see myself in these same mirrors that were there when I was a teenager, and I look humongous in these mirrors, and it's not till I get back home that I feel normal again.
I will admit there's a fairly large sum of money that I would get to watch you interact with people from Alabama. Just a boy raised in Michigan that now is in Philadelphia.
Yes, lovely, genteel Philadelphia.
Yeah,
yes.
just interacting down at the Piggly Wiggly. I would love to see you just making a purchase of anything, just anything. I would think that would be delightful. Well, I wanted to ask you both, actually. Have you ever seen the documentary of, and I'm trying to remember his name, there's a manga master.
Good self-correction there.
Yeah. What would I say? Anime?
You went manga, and then you went, no,
manga.
You were so far in the zone, you thought you said anime?
No. But there's a documentary that follows him as he's making manga at like 4 a.m. in an apartment that he keeps up in downtown Tokyo. Have you seen this documentary?
Yes, I have seen this.
Oh, it sounds delightful.
What is the name of the guy? I'm totally blanking. The guy that came up with Astro Boy. What's it? Help me out. Come on. Geez. Someone out there is literally tearing out their hair right now as they push their glasses up on their nose. Oh, don't you know who this is? Anyway, darn it.
Yeah, he's just lost all will.
Osamu Tezuka.
Tezuka, yes. Was it Tezuka? Maybe it was. That doesn't seem right.
I don't know. That's what Wikipedia says.
Yeah, it was one of the great artists, and he basically had this beautiful house outside of Tokyo, right?
Oh.
Lovely walk-up steps, and his wife was lovely, and they had a lovely home. And then he would literally go for, 6.5 days of the week to go to this tiny little apartment to eat macaroni and cheese and Alabama fried pig's ears like Brad's going to do and just draw comics. And it looked miserable, like his hand was cramping
their work schedules are horrifying.
It looked terrible, but at the same time, I love that both Dylan and I are so excited for you for this trip for Alabama, where you're going to be basically living the life of a manga artist
in a tiny
little apartment, frying up bacon fat from Alabama.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it too. And part of it is that you'd like to see me interacting with people from Huntsville. I don't plan on doing any interacting. I plan on holing myself in there and not saying a word to anybody for 5 days. It's going to be wonderful.
Well, I'm excited to get you the results of this and see how much work you got done, because I remember when I was a singlish dude, how many hours of work I could get in a week. And now I feel like I'm trying to finish up a comic strip while I'm cooking dinner. You know what I mean? Like I got a comic next to me on the stove and trying to, I'm envious of an uninterrupted chunk of time to cartoon by yourself. That's exciting.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, let's dive right into our first question, Bradley J.
Yes.
And this one we'll have Dylan start off with the answer. This is a fun one for her. So, except when something is painfully obvious, when I look at my own or somebody else's work, my reaction is usually, hey, that looks pretty good. Either that or something seems off, but I can't quite articulate what it is. So my question is, how do I improve my ability to notice specifically what's working and what's not working in the art or the writing of whatever it is I'm viewing?
Mm.
Dylan, I throw that one to you. How do they improve their critical eye? How do we all improve our critical eye?
Well, the number one answer is to just look at or read as much as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That
all right, that answers that. Okay, well, let's move on to the next one.
No,
good night, everybody.
The crummy thing about that is that your eye will always be improving. So something you think, 5 years ago you thought looked amazing, now you're going to look at it and be like, oh boy, oof, that is rough.
Yeah.
And there's no way to actually to super accelerate that to the point where your eye is at the best it will ever be. And that's one of the frustrating things that I hear from myself and from a lot of other artists is that sometimes your eye improves faster than your hand does.
Yes.
So you have leveled up cognitively in your ability to recognize, oh, this thing I'm drawing isn't quite right, but you have not yet gotten the hand skill, the drafting skill to implement those principles. So for a while, when it's kind of a growth spurt, you will just, your work will look like garbage to you. And then all of a sudden, your work will jump up a level, but you kind of have to just muscle through that offset period.
It is so frustrating when that happens, though. When either one levels up, when you can sense that you have suddenly clicked into either a work material or a device that you're drawing with, and yet your critical eye has not advanced too, or your internal editor eye has not advanced. So you're suddenly technically very good, but you don't yet know how to make, you can sense it, so it can work both ways too.
Yeah. You have a friend who gets really excited about a new tool, but they're just using it horribly.
right.
I found this amazing brush pen. Blah. Yeah. I'm doing dry brush techniques.
Blah. Scratch, 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 scratch. Yeah, that, well, that also, in fairness, that describes about 78% of my work. So that's good. Like, hey, look what I found, a technical pen. Oh, everyone's watching me use it wrong. Yeah. But yeah, I think there's a really excellent, I was looking for it right now as Dylan was talking, there's a really excellent quote from a podcaster, an American podcaster.
Ira Glass.
What's that?
Was it Ira Glass? Are we
it was Ira Glass. Thank you. For God's sakes, I'm such an 80-year-old today.
You and I are in sync because as you and Dylan were talking, I called it up because I wanted to quote it.
Yeah, please read it because I couldn't find it. So I would love for you to quote it.
It made the rounds on social media a couple of years ago. Okay, it was really popular. But it goes like this. Nobody tells this to people who are beginners. I wish someone told me. All of us who do creative work, we get into it because we have good taste, but there is a gap. For the first couple of years, you make stuff, it's just not that good. It's trying to be good, it has potential, but it's not. But your taste, the thing that got you into this game, is still killer. And your taste is why your work disappoints you. A lot of people never get past this phase, they quit. Most people I know do interesting creative work, went through years of this. We don't know our work doesn't have this special thing that we want it to have. We all go through this. And if you just are starting out or you're still in this phase, you got to know it's normal. And the most important thing you can do is a lot of work. Put yourself on a deadline so that every week you will finish one story. It is only going to be through a volume of work that you will close that gap and your work will be as good as your ambitions. And I took longer to figure out how to do this than almost anyone I've ever met. It's going to take a while. It's normal to take a while. You just got to fight your way through.
Yeah,
that absolutely is super, super great advice.
It's what I wish you could have seen Dylan and I listening to you read that quote because we're both just kind of quietly nodding along as you were reading. We're like, yep.
Did I do it? Did I do a good read? That's the other thing that I'm only going to bore you guys with one more Michigan story. We're on the road for 12 hours. And so I like I told you last episode, I downloaded the Untold History of Marvel Comics, 17 hours of audiobook. And I became, number one, if you guys haven't read it or listened to it, it's well worth the time if you're a comics fan. Fantastic book. But if you're listening to it in an audiobook form, you become fascinated with this guy that had to put so much passion into reading 17 hours worth of stuff. And I've become somewhat, I guess, smitten with the idea of doing voiceovers for books now.
It's funny you should say that because I don't know if you remember an hour or so ago when you called to we were coordinating times for this podcast.
Yeah.
And you were laughing on the phone and my wife from across the room, because you were on speakerphone, goes, Brad has the most delightful laugh. What a great voice Brad has. So I want you to know there's a television producer, Brad, that has your corner out here and is ready to help you break it into the big time in voiceover.
Have her people call my people, and by my people I mean me, as quickly as possible.
I thought you were going to say like Uncle Elmer, my farming uncle in the Thumb of Michigan.
Oh, I've got a great story. We're just going to have to do a Michigan show. Jeez.
Well, I want to tackle this question because you both have chimed in. By the way, that I really appreciate you finding that Ira Glass quote because it's more appropriate than anything else.
Yeah.
And I think the summary there is the two takeaways I get is that we were all drawn to comics even before we could really draw because there was a spark in all of us, and you can both correct me if I'm wrong, that we thought or we felt in our heart, it's probably better to say we felt that we could spot good comics when we saw them. You know, like we were like, this is good. And more than other forms of art, something about this really draws me to this art form, right? Wouldn't you both say? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a version of what Ira was saying there. And then the frustration comes because it takes those 10,000 hours or, you know, roughly 10 years to start getting good. And even now, if you ask me at any given point, and this has been a constant in my career, when are you going to start getting good at art, Dave? I will almost always say, oh, about 10 years from now, I feel like I'm going to be really good. That was true when I was 25. That was true when I was 35. It's going to be true when I'm 55. Is that if you ask me, when are you going to start getting good? I always think it's like I'm about 10 years away because I know enough now that like the practice that it takes and the development of my own critical eye, it's always just far enough away where it's not happening next year, but it's still attainable. And that always feels like it's about 10 years away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I want to just point out just for a minute, because what we're talking about is it sounds a little daunting. I want to just take a moment just to speak to whomever it was that sent that question in. How wonderful it is that they realize that this is a crucial piece of the puzzle. You know what I mean? Just how many times have we talked about Dunning-Kruger and the fact that, you know, people don't realize what they need to be better? How cool it is that this listener of ours gets it. And that is that they know what they should be focusing on. And that is developing an aesthetic. And your ability to tell good comics from bad comics may not be as refined as you'd like it to be. And I think Dylan hit the nail on the head. There's only one way to do that, and that is to read lots of comics and to read a wide variety of comics, not just superhero comics, but comics that maybe are history comics or comics written by people from a completely different walk of life than yours.
In fact, Brad, I will go a little bit further than yours. Definitely not superhero comics, because our culture is sort of there's sort of a cultural osmosis that even if we're not actively reading superhero comics, we're all sort of aware of how that format works. And so all
really
the more reason
point.
To read comics like Persepolis or Blankets or...
Even books without pictures are also a very good thing to read when learning how to tell stories.
Yeah, just storytelling that makes you aware of different ways to let another human being know of a series of actions or an emotion or different techniques and strategies that storytelling can take. So yes, I just wanted to reemphasize that point. Also, I wanted to say, and the irony is not lost on me, I love how every time you say it, you're unsure of how to say Dunning-Kruger. I think that is the most delightful thing about your personality, that Dunning-Kruger is not that's the word that trips you up. It's like, do I say Dunning-Kruger?
I've just spent 10 days in Michigan. You're darn lucky I didn't say Dunning-Kruger.
That's amazing. Let's all three of us, let's give one piece of advice though for this person, because we've all said, we all agree that work is what it takes and time is what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
But what is one thing they can do right now to help them work on their critical eye? Anybody want to tackle that one first?
I've got an idea.
I have got one too.
Okay, Dylan's ready to go.
Dylan first, guests first.
Form a critique group. With some peers. You don't have to pick people who are, you know, perceptibly at a better level of art or taste than you are. Cause honestly, everybody has a different perspective. The person who's drawing you don't think is that great sometimes is able to notice things that are flaws in your work in a way that you're not able to pick up on. Mm-hmm. So just get a group of people who are willing to be kind, but really honest, and to look over your stuff and give you notes on it. You give them notes on their stuff, and you will all level up a little bit more quickly that way.
That's great. That's a really good point.
That's better than mine. The only one I'm going to add to that is that if you are not in a place where you have anybody you can respect and trust to build that circle with, look at, and we've talked about this before as a way of catching mistakes, typing or typographical mistakes, spelling errors, and so forth. But it really works really well on art too. Look at your own work in a different way. Look at it in a mirror. Look at it upside down, or take it and flap it horizontally on your screen. You will see all kinds of flaws that now that you're looking at this thing for the first time. You're going to find a bunch of flaws. That's because ever since Dave, and I think Dave, you brought this up at the beginning of the year. Ever since Dave put that in my head, it's now a regular part of my drawing routine. As I draw any figure, I'm flopping it about halfway through, making it, firming up, making it better, and then flopping it again.
Please stop saying flopping it halfway through and firming it up. That's a terrible, but you can say that better, Brad. Don't take another running start at that one. Dylan's looking at me as like a 9-year-old. What are you doing, dude?
I'm a horizontal. That's the
flavor. Stop it. Go to a different point. Bail out.
Look at your work in a mirror, or look at it upside down. I'm going to leave it at that.
There you go.
I have a wholesome counterpoint to that, okay. Which is that that is a very, very useful tool for checking that your composition is balanced and that you that somebody's eyeball isn't sliding down their face. Mm-hmm. But there is a phenomenon where your brain gets used to seeing an image in the way that you have seen it multiple times. So especially when you're drawing something or if you've been looking at yourself in a mirror for a long time, that's how you expect the image to look. And when you flip it, some of the wrongness of that, the sense of wrongness you get when you look at that image is not because anything is actually wrong, but because neurologically it's startling. Part of why a lot of people don't like how they look in photographs, because you're used to seeing your face reflected in a mirror. So to you, your face looks kind of wrong because everything is reflected. So
yeah.
It is a good way to catch some drafting errors, but don't become too obsessed with it, because some of the things that you look at it and you go, oh my God, this drawing is terrible, it's actually just because you've been looking at it for a long time and your brain doesn't like those subtle differences. They've done studies with this where they flip the Mona Lisa and people hate it.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Wow.
It's terrible.
Because
they're used to seeing it the other way around.
Yeah,
so like,
yeah, yeah.
Show it to other eyeballs before you absolutely tear apart a finished piece because it looks weird in the mirror.
And there is a case too that when you start doing flipping, because I will agree that flipping is an effective thing for something, especially something you've never drawn before or you're not sure about. Flipping can be really helpful to get it right. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when you flip, you're going to see asymmetries that start to bother you. And I just want to warn people that sometimes the asymmetry is actually the life of that drawing.
Yeah.
And that if you start to correct it too much, you become a technical drawing and you lose the energy of what you're trying to convey. So just be careful of that too.
Well, great. Maybe I'll bring up a point that you guys don't shred to ribbons sometime in the show. That's just great. Thanks a lot. I feel great. Yep.
You know what?
I was having better luck with Uncle Elmer.
No, Brad, you know what? I want you to know there's a tremendous amount of love here for you.
We're going to get you there, buddy.
I while we were having pancakes this morning, we were talking about how great Brad Geiger was. That is the honest to gosh truth. That is.
Well, I feel better than you. You can share your tip.
So my tip is, as far as actionable step that you can do right now to improve your critical eye and your technical ability to match that critical eye, is pick one aspect of one cartooning master that you love and see if you can replicate it. And by doing that, you'll learn how they did it, why they did it, what the limits of what they did are. And in the process, you'll also train your hand-eye coordination to do some version thereof, right?
Yeah.
And so what I mean by that is, I'm trying to think of some people. Look at how Watterson crafted the weight of a river stone next to a river. Right. Mm-hmm. And this is just an example I'm grabbing out of thin air. But look at how he crafted the weight of that rock so that the next time you draw a rock, you're better at it. Dylan's laughing at me. Why are you laughing at me? What's this?
The next time you draw a rock, you'll draw.
You'll have greater rockness.
Next time you draw a rock, as you so often do.
It's good to have Dylan here to keep me in line. So I just mean like, or the tree, the way that a tree branches, or mm-hmm. or the way that Watterson would capture the simpleness of the very complicatedness of tree leaves, but he would capture it within, you know, 20 strokes versus the 150 strokes it would take to do it naturally and realistically. Or look at Tony Clift's colors in Delilah Dirk and see how he creates a mood or a palette.
That guy sucks.
And try to recreate that in your comics. And so I guess what I'm saying is, each time you try to copy a master, you'll learn a little bit about how they did it, the techniques they did it, and your eye will get better trained as to why they did it the way they did it.
Yeah.
And I think that might help people as a step-by-step process.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on to question number two. Bradley, you want to read this one, or shall I give a run and grow at it?
Take it away.
All right. Here is my question. If you have more than one project, what are the advantages and disadvantages of having a Patreon support me, I'm the creator type Patreon versus two or more separate Patreon campaigns for each project?
Mm.
And so examples of this might be, let's think of friends that have many projects going. Chris Straub has many projects going,
mm-hmm.
and I believe has one overall umbrella Patreon.
Dylan currently has, I think, 19 projects she's working on.
Yeah, that's about it.
And she has one umbrella Patreon. Brad, you have one Patreon, but it's mainly focused on the biggest project in your life of EP.
Right.
And then
Dave has 17 Patreons.
In contrast, I have 17 Patreons, one for my dishwashing, one for my yard work, and two for my comics, and one for my podcast. So Dylan and Brad, why don't you launch in? Why did you set up your Patreons the way you did? And what do you think the advantages and disadvantages are?
Sure. I originally set mine up for my webcomic Family Man, which at the time I was updating once a week. And I wanted to keep the rewards really simple and really focused on those particular readers. It was stuff like get high res images of the page as soon as I finish it. You get to read the footnotes ahead of anybody else. So it was very much like a single project. And then I had to put that webcomic on hold because I had two publisher projects kind of go into hyperdrive at the same time. So I didn't want to just turn that Patreon off while there was no new Family Man content, but it also didn't seem like, hey, support me while I do these two paid projects was really a great pitch either. So instead I switched it over saying, hey guys, Family Man is going to be back. But in the meantime, if you're still interested in what I'm doing and you want to hear what I'm up to and you want to, you know, throw me some cash so that I don't eat ramen for the next 3 years, stick around and you'll continue to get updates on, you know, secret, top secret, intimate updates on that stuff. So for me, it was just an audience retention. I'm making so many hand gestures at Dave right now.
No, it's fine.
It was really an audience retention move for me because I had to set the main project I was working on aside and I didn't want to just lose all of those people and lose all of that income source.
And just out of curiosity, do you share pages unpublished as yet unpublished pages of Queen of the Sea with people on Patreon?
I haven't put up a whole ton, mostly because I've been so busy making them.
Right.
So I have not kept up as much as I like to. And they're also just, publishers can be really itchy about that stuff because they don't want preview stuff to sneak out into the world in advance of their genius marketing plan. So I've been pretty quiet over there, but it's been more of an outlet for me to tell people what that work has actually looked like. Just in terms of my schedule and the sort of things I've been taking on. Right. So I've posted stuff that I know is safe for general consumption.
Right. And have you been happily surprised by how many people stuck around or have you been like,
it's actually gone like slightly up.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
I'm so continually surprised by how nice people are on Patreon.
They really are.
That when you give them a chance to do it in an easy way, people will step up.
My mom joined at the $20 a month level.
Oh, bless her heart.
I think it was passive aggressive, actually. Like, well, this is what I have to do to get updates on my daughter's professional life. Also because it was the level where I cheekily said in the rewards description that you would have a chance to pre-order my books before my mom. I think she saw that and was just like,
Well, and to be fair, we know of a few artists. I'm trying to think of some, maybe like Lucy Bellwood, who does that kind of generalized, like, hey, support me as an artist. Sometimes there'll be spurts of productivity that you'll see. Sometimes it'll look like things are fallow, but I'm actually germinating ideas, right? Doesn't she say that?
Yeah, and a lot of what she creates is actually just about her life and her travels.
Right.
So she ends up having a really blended output of, you know, story material or art challenges.
Right.
And then also like, look at this crazy place I'm in this week. I'm on a boat.
Right. And then, so Brad, for you, what was the decision maker where you made, how you structured your Patreon?
Well, I'm going to take it from another angle because mine really developed in an organic, amorphic way. But what I learned along the way is what I want to share. And that is, as you've heard me say on this show before, lots of content on your Patreon page is a good thing. If you can arrange it so that your patron gets a ping from you through your Patreon page once a day. And by the way, that's why I always post sketches, because that's a great way to kind of help that along. But if you can get if you can make contact with your patron as often as possible, as frequently as possible, that's a really, really good thing. So what I would tell this question asker is that you should have all your stuff combined into one central Patreon, and that's going to make it a lot easier for you to keep sending out posts. Hey, this is something else you're getting from me today. This is something else you're getting from me today. Then those people are going to be, in my opinion, more likely to stay with you because they're getting lots of stuff for their pledge. And it becomes a promotional tool for you when you go out on social media and say, hey, last month I posted 36 posts for my Patreon backers. This month I'm on track for 32. You know, those kinds of things keep patrons and gain patrons. So I wouldn't dilute my content by sending it out through a bunch of different Patreons. I'd put everything in one thing. You're supporting this guy. And if you think those two things are different and too different, that the audiences won't gel, nobody gets as different. Nobody has as big of a sway as I do. I have very different content on my site. It doesn't matter. Everything, people get different things at different levels, and I'm putting stuff out there at this point on a daily basis. And I, for me, I've seen that work really strongly.
So my attitude with Patreon was a complete 180 from yours, Brad. Mm-hmm. And it's worth discussing the differences because, as you say, you have a very broad spectrum.
Yeah.
From the body of your work going from, I would almost say child-friendly to not suitable for work. And that's a very broad spectrum. But for me, with Sheldon and Drive, I wanted the public market to help me make a choice that I didn't have the strength to make myself. The kind of Sophie's choice of like, which one of my children will survive of the comics market. And so much to my surprise and frankly, a small amount of joy, market kind of picked Drive, and Drive finds much more success with Patreon than Sheldon does. And so that doesn't mean that I've ended Sheldon. It doesn't mean that I've curtailed it any more than I would have normally. But it does tell me to put more emphasis on Drive. Mm-hmm. And it's been kind of a lovely reinforcement to do something that I was hesitant about. I didn't know if people would want sci-fi from me or were enjoying it or, you know, all the sort of standard insecure things that an artist would feel.
Yeah, long form story is kind of scary too when you've been doing a strip for a long time.
And I've been doing Sheldon now for 20 years. And so it's natural maybe that the excitement is behind the new project. But I think also something about sci-fi and something about long form sci-fi, people are willing to support. Because when it does click, people are like, oh, thank goodness, the sci-fi that's working, I think. Because we've all, if you're a fan of sci-fi like me, you trudge through a lot of terrible stories before you get to an Isaac Asimov you know, and you're like, oh, thank God, this works, this story works, it all makes sense.
A ton of fun, friendly sci-fi either.
Yeah, it's kind of a joy-filled sci-fi, which a lot of sci-fi tends to be like, oh, this is very serious. We're in a lot of trouble here with these aliens. This robot is really giving us trouble.
Or commentary-filled, you know, like we're going to make a comment about this current event through sci-fi. And it's great, but it can weigh you down.
Anyway, so I let Patreon have two... I did Sheldon separate from Drive, separate from Comic Lab, because I wanted my projects to live on their own. And so far, I have to say, I have zero regrets for that. I really like it. I like knowing who's supporting what, how much they're supporting it, what's working, because you can kind of drill down in the way that, like, you know, when you're tracking your sales, it's nice to know on a more, what's the word I'm looking for? Granular level.
That's the corporate buzzword.
It's nice to know on a more granular level where the support is coming from, what it's going towards, and how and why it's working, what's making it happen.
Yeah, tracking.
Now I'm doing too many hand motions to Dylan as I try to explain this. Anyway, that's why I chose it. And I would actually argue against both of you and say that I think that way is better.
I don't entirely disagree. If my other projects if they were independent, if they were self-published, I probably would have done that.
Granularly.
Yeah, I probably would have broken them out into different projects. If I were publishing The Long Con, or if I were publishing my big middle grade project, Queen of the Sea, as a self-published project, I probably would have done that. But because I was doing those with publishers, it felt, it just didn't feel like as good of a fit for the Patreon audience.
Right. And Brad, I would even argue, and you are 100% right in your rights to say no. But I would even argue that I think you should break yours out into project specific Patreon. But I get what you're saying is that you want every day have one, if not two, if not three different things going up on Patreon from all your different aspects of your cartooning in this one stream. But I think there is an advantage to being able to split up your not suitable for work audience from your child friendly audience, from your more editorial audience. But I'm 100% willing to be wrong there. What do I know?
Well,
but,
that goes back to that discussion we had a couple episodes ago, and we focused on the whole not safe for work thing. And you know, it would have been a lot easier if I would have assumed a pen name. But I also thought that that would also be kind of dishonest to do, and I wanted to do honest smut. So, you know, I didn't want to take a pen name, but it would have made things a lot easier. The problem is...
Hold on, I got to stop you. The phrase honest smut just cracked me up.
Good, clean American smut.
Just like grandma used to make. Apple pie, baseball, and some good honest smut.
I know that sounds weird, but you got to know that it actually comes from the heart. I feel that there is honest smut. And as weird as it sounds,
you're saying like good-hearted smut, smut that has an optimism and a shared humanity of like everyone's being respected.
Well, I mean, yes, there are issues I feel strongly about, like consent and stuff like that. That definitely I keep in mind when I'm working, but also just the.
It's not something as a creator you should be ashamed of.
Yeah, I know. That's, this is not something we're calling you out on. It's just the phrase honest smut sounds like a great college band name, you know?
Sure does.
Please welcome to the stage, honest smut. All right, here we go.
Something I'd like to see Patreon build in a little better in the future is the option as a follower to pick the tags, the post tags that you're actually interested in receiving. Because a lot of newsletters for companies say, okay, I want to hear about this part of the magazine and that part of the magazine. Don't mail me about this other stuff. I'm not interested.
Right.
And it would be great for Patreon if you could say, I would like to get email notifications of posts that are about Evil Inc. And about, you know, updates from Brad's personal life and the other stuff I'm not so into.
No,
that would be the only problem with me splitting it is right now I'm doing really well with the After Dark series. Evil Inc. alone, the $1, and I guess you could even combine the $5 pledges, makes me not quite $100 a month. So if I did that, if I was doing this in a Sophie's Choice type of way, I'd almost be forced to stop doing Evil Inc. and just go all in on the other side, which doesn't also fit my mental place of how I'm approaching this. For me, Evil Inc. is kind of almost like a loss leader that I do that generates the eyeballs, some of which are interested in the After Dark series.
It's a feeder for your smut.
Exactly. But if I were really being honest, if I split those up, I don't know that I would be doing. I don't know that I'd be working as hard on the Evil Inc. stuff.
Yeah, the fact that they share a world, I think, makes a difference.
Yeah. But like for me, knowing that Drive makes something like on the order of 10 to 12 times what Sheldon makes on Patreon. Significantly changes how I get it, because this is exactly what you just said, is that knowing that Evil Inc. might only make you a few hundred dollars might influence how much you put out for it or how much you create for it.
Right.
And so I get that because you still love it. And I think to Dylan's point, it still is a feeder for the other stuff. It's a gateway drug to get other people in to the other stuff. But
if you like them with the clothes on, you'll love them with the clothes on.
It is still instructive to know what people are enjoying. But as I'm saying this, I just remembered another thing that I should forewarn people about in setting up different Patreon accounts. And it's something that has bothered me with Patreon. Patreon doesn't allow for one user to have multiple accounts. So I have to create three user accounts, one for Dave at DaveKellett.com, and that was Drive. And then I had to come create some stupid Gmail address to
Shmave
do Shell. Yeah, Shmave at ShmaveKellett.com at Gmail. And then Shmave, that's,
smell it.
That's for Sheldon. And then, Brad, you and I had to come up with another faux email for Comic Lab to do that.
Yeah.
You just use Beth's email.
Yeah, I'm just putting down anything.
And it's hard to try to coordinate between one and another, too. You know, like I've got to sign out of the Geiger Patreon and then sign into the Comic Lab one. And I'm always so nervous that I'm going to post the wrong thing to the wrong Patreon.
suddenly everybody from Comic Lab is hot under the collar as Brad is posting something he shouldn't. We're like, oh, Brad, oh, good morning. All right. No, but it is annoying because what a task that could take 5 minutes to do,
right.
It does add a minute or two to have to log out, double check that you're in the right account, post.
Yep.
Double check that you're in the right account, post, you know.
Do the two-factor authentication.
Yeah,
I made the terrible mistake of going to two-factor authentication on Patreon, and it has absolutely destroyed my will to update. Yeah. Because I know I'm like, I'm going to have to go across the house and get my phone and then type it in like the 3 seconds it gives you. And then it drives me so bonkers every time that I'm just like, ugh. When I would have dashed out a quick post, I don't. So basically what I'm saying is if you're a hacker and you're listening to this in the next few weeks, you can look forward to a much easier experience hacking into my Patreon.
There you go.
I'm going to deactivate that authentication.
Look for that in the coming weeks. Speaking of which, as a good host, I should have mentioned Dylan's Patreon for people that want to check that out.
Do.
As it is a good gateway to a lot of the things she's doing right now. So patreon.com/DYLANMECONIS. So Dylan McConis. I tend to say it right, don't I?
Yeah, you do. But people get worried and then they overcorrect.
I just did a Dunning-Kruger, Brad Geiger style. Danang Krager. It delights me, whatever happens. And I just did it with Dylan's last name. So there we go.
No, I love that in the my family's departure from Lithuania, they dropped a bunch of letters and diacritics from the proper spelling of the name.
It's Lithuanian? I thought it was Greek.
Everybody thinks it's Greek. It's Lithuanian. It should be Michonis, and there should be, like I said, like 3 diacritics in there and a Y and an extra I. Like they really chopped it down. My grandfather went by Mac in World War II.
Oh, that's great. Of course in World War II he went by Mac. Like your grandfather. That's great.
Yeah. No, he was a war hero.
Michonis sounds like a dish that you're ordering. Like, oh, and does the Michonis have onion in it here? Or is that, can I get that without onion?
It is the name of a rural township in Lithuania with a population of 46.
Have you been?
Wow.
No, but I've looked it up on Wikipedia.
How can you not go? It's your namesake.
Well, I mean, it's a town in the former Soviet Republic of Lithuania that you could literally drive through on a scooter in about a minute and a half.
But I've heard, and this is not just shooting the shit. It is shooting the shit, but I've heard Lithuania's doing great right now. Like Vilnius is really pretty right now.
It's doing okay,
isn't it?
But it took some hits.
It took, yeah, definitely took
some
hits.
Between the Second World War and then being part of the Soviet bloc. Also, it's very, very Catholic, so it's not super friendly to the gays.
Oh, really?
That would probably be a little uncomfortable.
Yeah,
for me.
All right. Well, then never mind about my vacation.
But my grandfather went on a big heritage trip back there, and he made it back to some of the villages that my farming ancestors came from, and like found the one priest who remembered the family. And his comment on the Michonis side of the family was, "Oh yes, they were big drinkers."
You know what though? If you went back to all of our great grandparents that came here, there's always a story about like, oh yeah, yeah. The Kellets. It's good they left. You know, like,
they were not great.
That guy was a real SOB. I'm glad he went to America. That's good. That's good.
It was time for him to go.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my digression.
Oh yes, Mrs. Geiger. I remember her well. What a kick in the pants she was. The village is better now that she's left. Yes.
She picked a good time to leave. But yeah, then again, any time would have been a good time.
So, Brad, I think one more question for today, my friend. What do you think? Do you want to read it or shall I jump in on that
one? You're doing such a good job. Just keep it right up.
And for the folks at home, that's Brad's way of saying, I don't have the question in front of me, Dave. You go ahead.
You're absolutely right.
So this is a good one for all three of us doing long form. So this will be, we'll throw this one to our guest first and we'll see what Dylan has to say. So Dylan, hi Dylan. I wanted to write in and ask you this question, knowing you would be on the show. I'd like to hear your best suggestions to bring in and integrate new readers in the middle of a long form ongoing story.
And now, if I'm not right, you're about page 240 for Family Man.
David. No, I'm page 400-something.
400?
Yeah.
Oh, I am sorry. However, yeah. better to let you like have a humble brag in saying it the way
that
I said
it. That was not
a
brag. I do not come up with short stories.
Well, real quick, give everybody the URL for Family Man so that we get it right, so they can go look at it.
You can go to lutherlevy.com. Luther, L-U-T-H-E-R, and Levy, L-E-V-Y.com.
And it has been running since when, as a long-form story?
So long.
Since Mrs. Geiger left the old country.
Are you ready for this? 2006.
2006.
Holy cats.
Yeah, I was graduating from kindergarten in 2006.
Those initial chapters look real great to me now.
No, it's beautifully drawn. It really is. If you haven't seen it, go check it out right now. It's as we're talking about.
Yeah, but
really
strangely,
beautiful.
I have improved in the last 15 years. the number one thing you can do, especially for online content, is just have a navigation tab at the top of the page saying new readers. Mm-hmm. And then what you do on that new readers page is you give a, basically the jacket copy of a book, where you kind of give them the basic pitch of the story, say a little bit about the characters, and then you got a big old button saying start reading here, and it takes them to the first page. That is 100% the best thing you can possibly do. Just to let them know, like, hey, there's no secret formula here. You don't have to click a weird double button that maybe takes you to the first page or maybe takes you back in time to some difficult part of your life.
Right.
So just give people a really nice big orientation flag. That is my biggest recommendation. And honestly, people are excited to see something with a big archive because it means they actually have content to read.
So. Are they? You think that's true, that people want it to be?
I hear from a lot of folks who are like, oh my God, I love this. I just blazed through all four chapters and now I'm mad it's not over yet. And I have to wait for the slow burn.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't think it's as big a barrier as we sometimes worry. Like folks are excited to know that there's already a book or two in the series often. And as long as you have that flag saying, hey, don't worry, you don't have to do advanced math to start reading the story.
Right.
Yeah.
So what's funny is we have trained a lot of our business for the people that like to read page by page, mm-hmm. but you're saying there's a huge chunk that doesn't want any of that nonsense. Just give me a near completed story.
Yeah. And Family Man is very novelistic. It doesn't have a quick pace at all. There's mm-hmm. not a cliffhanger on every page. So I've had a lot of readers like apologetically come up to me and be like, I don't read every page as it comes out. I only read it every few months when there's a good backline. Like, that's how you're supposed to read it.
Yeah,
it's a book.
That's how I'm writing.
Don't worry about it. And honestly, the shift in a lot of webcomics from ad revenue to stuff like Patreon mm-hmm. has played very well for me because I don't have to, the metrics of individual, like unique page views per day means nothing.
Right.
It doesn't have any connection to my income, whereas something like Patreon has a very direct connection to my income. So it for long burn, if you have a Patreon, that is a really smart way to capitalize on those readers who maybe aren't coming to look at a strip every day and getting eyeballs on ads.
Right.
And it's also a very hard story to merchandise because it's about an 18th century graduate student falling in love with a librarian who's involved in a werewolf cult. There's not a lot of funny t-shirts. You
that old tale
that.
Again? Boy,
yeah,
how many
I
times
know.
Have we heard that story? Are you really want to retread those?
So it's not really something I can make a lot of t-shirts off of. So having just a means of support that also reminds people when a new page is up is very helpful.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that I've ever asked you this. Do you have an anticipated page length of when it's going to wrap or?
Yeah, we're over halfway. 3/5 of the way through the story.
Wow. So this is going to be a long story then. That's
well,
great.
To do,
800
I,
to 900
pages?
I have
a pages? Lot of terrible things to do to the characters, Dave. Just a lot
yeah,
of
sure.
terrible things
sure.
lie ahead. We're,
sure, I get
you. We've crested the hill and now it's
and
just
now it's
be,
just blood and guts and
it's,
terrible.
It's bad choices all the way down.
It's all the things that made Grandma Geiger leave the old country. Is the final chapters here.
Basically,
you're gonna keep swinging away at Grandma Geiger leaving the old country until it hits, aren't you?
I like the idea that Grandma Geiger. I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm not gonna insult your grandmother. God rest her. I'm not gonna go down that path anymore. Sorry. So, Brad, how do you bring new readers or entice them to a story that has been plugging away for a long time now?
Well, I've got a couple thoughts on this, and I think I mentioned earlier that I'm going to hopefully bring out a redesign on my main site sometime this year, and I'm going to try and put some of these into use and see if I can back it up, if I can back up my big mouth. But there's a few things that I really want to suggest and see if we can make work. The first is, especially if you're doing long form, I want to see switching to a landing page type of idea instead of doing the traditional putting up just the first page or just the current page of comics. Switching to a landing page where you might see that current page of comics, but you're also presented with an easy way of navigating to the different chapters, a way to go from the very beginning to the beginning of the chapter that's live right now. I'd like to see that landing page be a place where somebody who is coming in at the middle can make a bunch of choices in how they go from there. So that's something I really want to see if we put it to use, whether that has a positive effect. And the other is, in conjunction with that, I want to really see if I can start to, and I've actually made a little push on this just this week, but breaking those chapters down into ebooks, which are price point like 99 cents or $1.99, really easy price point, so that if somebody is getting into it, they don't, if the reading on a web page is not great, it's not a great experience. Especially if you're on a tablet, which more and more of our readers are on. So I want to try to start to push those ebook sales of the individual chapters so that if somebody does find themselves getting immersed in the story, they can download that ebook and make it so much easier for them to work their way through and get immersed in that without having to deal with that website interface. And of course, I'm just going to underline what Dylan said is, even if all those things are things you don't want to try, your major player in that battle is a good page to indoctrinate new readers. If you've got that, you're doing a really good job. And if that page is enticing, don't give them a big page full of great text. You're an artist. Put some illustrations in there. Tart it up a little bit. Make it interesting. But if you've got a good page for new readers that introduces people and that you update it as the story moves along, which is something I haven't done. By the way, all of this stuff, don't go to Evil Inc. And I haven't done any of this stuff myself, but I like talking about it an awful lot. Hopefully soon I'll have some real experiences to back it up with. But those are the three things I really feel strongly about.
Well, I think both of you nailed it, mainly because I have no idea. And this is the honest to gosh truth. I have no idea how to entice somebody into a long form storyline.
It's tough. It's
emotionally the constant battle that I fight with myself is that I don't know how to pitch my long form story in an elevator format. I don't know how to get someone who's just traveling the page right then. My thought is, and I'm happy to be proven wrong here, is that the way most people find out about Drive is that some friend of theirs in sci-fi tells them, hey, you like sci-fi and you like this kind of sci-fi, you're going to like Drive. I think word of mouth is a big part of how people come to find it. And I'm 100% willing to be proven wrong on that. But and I do have, to Dylan's point, if you go to Drive, I have the page that says, hey, new here, ? And it gives you the one-line character summations, a three-sentence description of where the basic story goes and what's happening, and then a click here, and it starts you at the beginning of the archives, right? So I have that.
You need navigation for the Drive tales, though.
I do.
It's impossible to find them on the site right now.
I am going to take that with huge humility because I need about 40 things for the Drive site in terms of redesigning that site. Yeah. I need better drop-down navigation for like aspects of the story and then for little sub-stories and Tales of the Drive. Tales of the Drive, for those that don't know, are artists and friends that I've hired in to come and play in that sandbox and tell independent standalone stories. And so to Dylan's point, I need to have a specific navigation for those. I need to have a specific navigation for different acts in Drive. I need to make it easier basically for people who say, oh, I haven't read Drive for the last 6 months. I would like to jump back in. I have no idea where I left it. Or, hey, I've never read Drive before. What can I expect? And so like if you go to Dylan's Family Man, over at lutherlevy.com, you'll see that she's got chapter headings and stuff. I don't have any of that. I'm oh, look at this. She's showing me now, not only does she have the chapters, she has thumbnails of the whole chapter, so you can, I didn't know you had this.
Yeah.
So you can very quickly, Brad, you got to see this. This is really brilliant. How did you code this?
I got the lovely designer Tyler Martin to code it for me, and I told him exactly what I wanted.
I'm going to hire Tyler to do this. This is very nice.
Now, wait, I'm looking at it right now. Oh, are you looking at the scene index?
Yeah, if you click on scene index, so there you got kind of got two options for navigating. If you click the thumbnail of the first page of the chapter, it just takes you straight to the first page of the chapter. Mm-hmm. If you click the chapter title, chapter one, chapter two, it will take you to an index of thumbnailed pages. So that's useful for folks who kind of visually remember where they are in the story. Right. But,
like, I know I saw the library scene, but I haven't seen the scene with the fox.
Or they want to go to that cool page where they really liked the layout, or the one where there's nakedness.
That's brilliant. And as a matter of fact, that's exactly, if anybody from Patreon's listening, that's exactly how comics should be presented on Patreon.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, my one critique for Patreon right now, and I'm interested to go to... my big one, is they're making a very big push of late towards a reward fulfillment, either physical or digital fulfillment, and sort of basically membership support. And I can see why, from a monetary standpoint, they want to do that. But it seems like a logistical nightmare for one, and two
adds a lot to their plate.
Yeah, I don't know that that's something that most people are clamoring for from them versus a lot of the other features that I've heard people want from them.
I think, like a lot of stuff they do, I think it's skewed towards YouTubers, most of whom don't have independent websites. So they sort of want like one-stop supporter shopping where you can come and get your exclusive content and buy a snapback hat.
Right.
Whereas a lot of comics people, we have our own stores and websites, and so we don't necessarily need somebody to send out t-shirts for us.
Gotcha.
Right.
Yeah. The problem for me, and we can talk about this on another show, we don't have to talk about it today, but if what does this entail for Patreon? Is there some massive warehouse that they have in Iowa?
Or are they partnering with the service?
Yeah, but like your average reward system is going to be 100 of this t-shirt, 200 of these pins. Now multiply that by all the different creators on Patreon, and that's a logistical nightmare.
Yeah.
I have trouble keeping the logistics of my own stuff in my store going, and I have a real sharp eye on it. So imagine those warehouses of just 10,000 items, 50 units each, or 100 units each.
Yeah,
that just seems
SKUs.
Miserable. All those SKUs, it just seems like they're setting them up for a world of hurt with that. But anyway... Go, more power to them. Go with God, Patreon.
Anyway, guys.
But I'm curious, when you and I see their senior staff in November, I want to ask them about that, because I think Dylan is right. I think they are skewing towards the podcasting and YouTuber and I'm trying to think what other kind of a, but yeah, I think mainly YouTubers. You're right. That's who they're skewing.
That's
towards.
Kind of always been their core.
That's their nucleus.
Folks.
You're right. Yeah.
And I mean, there are a lot of, Jack's a musician, so there are a lot of musicians who are. Their main audience is through YouTube, and then, they sell downloads of music on the side.
Right. And one of the reasons why I think I'm critical of it is my spidey sense tells me there's no way that that's going to translate to a good amount of money for the creator, because those logistics are going to be brutal, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that works is when you atomize it and have the creator handle it themselves. If you have some big fulfillment company handling it, you're going to end up with one of those things where it's like, you get 50 cents per t-shirt, that kind of thing. Oh, hooray. I'm paying the mortgage with that.
Well, here's my prediction when it comes to fulfillment of physical goods. My prediction is that it's going to work something like this. They're going to have similar as how we present ourselves to our readers. They're going to have tiers, and you're going to, a certain tier might cost this much, and a certain tier might cost that much, and a certain tier might even be free. But then in order to qualify for that, you're going to have a certain number of these things manufactured or printed up and ready to send to their warehouse. That's going to self-select a lot of these folks out. Like if you're just sending out 10 t-shirts and you're only doing it once every 6 months, you're not going to opt in for this because they're going to price you out of that. But if you are doing a 1,000-unit book run, and you can send a pallet up to their warehouse, and you've got those ready to go, now that's going to be cost effective for you to do. So I've got a feeling they're going to use us, and I don't know, I don't have any inside knowledge on this, but my guess is that they're going to do something like that. That they're going to kind of, they're going to have it there, but it's going to be something that they will find a way to self-select people who really aren't going to maximize this. And really have it for the people that have a bunch of merchandise that they need to move.
Yeah, they're going to have minimum orders. And I wonder how much of it might be POD stuff, print on demand. Yeah, also,
I would be not surprised at all if they had a print on demand solution in the works.
It would be real cool if before they did that stuff, they made the blogging platform not terrible.
I just lost a $10 pledge last week where the guy said, I don't know who it was, a guy or girl, but the person, they said in their exit comment, they said, I love your work. It's fantastic. I'm really enjoying it. I just can't stand the Patreon interface. I can't read your sequential stuff in a comfortable way. And so I'm out.
Yeah, they've not put that. And again, I think because they're concentrating on people who just upload a music file or link to a YouTube video, the idea of, hey, it would be real cool if we could include like multiple images as content and it wasn't automatically resized in a way where you never say what the specs are. That would be nifty.
Yeah. Although let's give credit where credit is due. They finally got around to showing tagged filtered results in oldest to newest or newest to oldest. And that was a big step. It took them a while to get there, but that was, that's a big step
forward. Welcome to 1998.
But whenever I'm feeling generous with them, I always have to remind myself that they are supporting very different kinds of artists.
Sure.
They are supporting not only YouTubers, they're supporting a dance troupe in Toronto, and they're supporting a sculptor that works solely with, Riverside clay. And so like it's all these, any type of artist you can think of. And so they're like, all right, yes, I guess archiving is important for comics. We're going to get to that right after we get to how to present dance troupes in Toronto. You know, like they have very different concerns that they're trying to address, you know.
Well, and they've got that new Riverside Clay app coming out that I'm really excited about.
I got to tell you, I deserve that. I'm not even going to fight that one. I deserve that one. That was really an obscure.
I love the inventiveness of Riverside Clay. I couldn't have come up with that in a million years.
I was trying to think of weird, specific, you know, types of art that, like, only use found fur from a farm, but it has to be on the ground, and that's what I use to make my. I put that into my loom, and I weave with that.
But listen, we buried the lead, Dave. We're going to be going to Patreon. You and me, both.
Well, the big thing is that Brad's going to come stay with me. I'm very excited to have my friend come stay at my house.
Yeah,
that's very exciting.
I'm really geeked about this.
Brad, I would practice your sword craft before you come.
Yeah, there's a lot of foam swords around the house these days, Brad. And you're gonna be woken up with by one, as Dylan has found out. So you gotta be ready for that.
I would be upset if it was any other way.
And I hope your Riverside clay is ready to go for some sculpting.
Oh, listen, you haven't seen Riverside clay till you've seen me throw that stuff.
Oh, that's delightful. Yeah, so we're gonna probably and on that note, if you're on the fence about backing Patreon, Comic Lab on Patreon, when we get to 250 patrons, we're going to try something different, which is video Comic Lab.
Yeah.
And I think if we time this out right, because Brad's coming out in November, we might have 250 patrons by the time you get out here in November, Brad, and we can film something side by side.
Yeah.
Which would be super fun.
Yeah, and just if you're on the fence, become a patron now, because I'm going to be using my part of the Patreon take to pay my airfare. So be a patron, please.
Delightful. Well, I mean, listen, you've spent money to go to Michigan. You spent money to go to Alabama. Now you get to come to Los Angeles.
That's right. And I'm like I said, I'm super looking forward to this because I've wanted to do that for a while now since we started doing the show. And it's going to be great. We can get a lot of stuff done. Just sit down and bang out some episodes and it'll be great.
Well, and as we should mention, as a service to Comic Lab, one of the things that the Patreon is their big powwow about what's coming, what should be coming.
How to align your chakras.
Right. Wow, I like the passing shots of Dylan on that.
But is it a Riverside revenue? Chakra?
Yeah, exactly. But it's also a chance to give direct feedback. I remember last year I was able to say, this exact thing is not working for me. And they fixed it the last time I went to Patreon. So
I remember when you were telling me about Patreon, and I was eating my heart out that I didn't go. And I felt like I really missed an opportunity. So when I got the invitation this year, I'm like, I got to go. I got to find a way to make this happen. The only thing I'm really upset about, I'm going to have to fly. It's November 1st through the 3rd. I'm going to have to fly out like early in the morning, November 1st, because we always throw a huge Halloween party. And I kind of floated the balloon to my boys. Are we getting too old for the Halloween party? And they're like, no, we want us to. And it's become like a thing. There's friends we've had through the years that we've kind of, their kids have gone to different schools and we parted neighborhoods and stuff. And they always come back to the house and we have a big deal for Halloween. So I there's no way I'm giving up Halloween. So
you're still
gonna
have clown makeup in your hairline.
I'll still be in my Doctor Strange. I'll have those streaks of white in my hair, and I'm gonna be a candy hungover, or maybe just hungover, November 1st. But by God, I'm gonna be there.
Well, and more troublesome, you're going to have to ask for the seatbelt extension just because of the Three Musketeers you gorged the night before.
Yeah, you know me too well.
An extra 10 inches on that seatbelt. So
Three Musketeers and Whiskey Sours. It's a great way to spend the night.
Oh, you're going to be a great spirit. We're going to have to give you a Los Angeles detox when you get out here. It's going to be a juice cleanse when you get here. And you'll see how ridiculous Los Angeles is. No, but we'll be excited. We'll be sharing that on patreon.com/comiclab when Brad is out here and sharing what we learned on Patreon and tips and tricks and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that'll be that. Well, on that note, we should thank our wonderful guest, Dylan, who will also be joining us for Pro Tips this week. The Patreon-specific podcast we do for Comic Lab. She'll be joining us there. But we should thank her and remind everybody to go to your local comic book shop and check out Long Con from Oni Press. Issue 1 is out now. Issue 2 will be out in September. Is that right?
I think that's right.
In September. And then definitely check her out at patreon.com/DylanMeconis. DylanMeconis, and it's Meconis, which is a lovely dish served with onion and a light chopped potato and lentils.
Lentils, yeah.
There's definitely some lentils in Meconis.
You know
it's a delightful. And then Family Man over at LutherLevy.com. And Brad Geiger, you want to take us out? You want to take us home?
There's one thing I got to note. Dylan now holds a special standing in the pantheon of Comic Lab guests. She's the first guest that has actually been a repeat guest. She's the first one that's been by twice now.
Ah, suck it, other guests.
She is like, she is on a level of her own right now.
Doing
so,
my little Snoopy dance over here.
That's
right.
Right
now somewhere, Lucy Bellwood or Jake Parker are crying into their suit.
That's right. Well, there's a chance for them on another point. But on this point, we got to say you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been Brad Geiger. I don't have it in front of me, so I'm going to do this. I'm going to wing it because I don't have it in front of me. Your hosts have been Brad Geiger, cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com and host and editor of webcomics.com.
You did it perfectly. And Dave Kellett, the sharp-minded, mentally able co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode has been edited by Matt Woodard at www.woodsong.media.
Absolutely. Right? Home run. Woodsong Productions. Absolutely.
The little angel of memory over here.
Oh,
this is great.
You've been taking your Gingo Balboa. Comic Lab is
my wife.
That stuff that Larry King used to promote, Ginkgo Balboa.
It's Ginkgo Biloba.
And I forgot.
Also, Dave, the Greek goddess of memory is Mnemosyne.
Wow. Oh. I got to tell you, Brad, you've really been Danning T. Craigering it today. This has been great. What did you say? Did you say Ginkgo Balboa? Is that what you said?
Ginkgo Balboa.
Philadelphia talking there.
I want to go back and re-listen. I think he said Giggle Balboa. I'm not sure.
It's either Herb Supplement or one of the unseen characters from Lord of the Wings. Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Wings!
No, I think it's Rocky's cousin.
It just that sounded like you were one of the 300-pound guys in Sopranos going, yeah, I took some of that Giggle Balboa. You tried that, Dylan? Hey, Dylan, you tried that Giggle Balboa? It's pretty good stuff. Helps with your memory and I think with your teeth. I'm not sure. It's Giggle Balboa.
Comic Laugh is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclaugh. So we'll go ahead and say that twice, patreon.com/comiclaugh.
And this episode has been brought to you by Giggle Balboa. Giggle Balboa for your memory and for your teeth.
I'm flopping at about halfway through, making it, firming up, making it better, and then flopping it
Please
again.
Please stop saying flopping it halfway through and firming it up. That's a terrible, but you can say that better, Brad. Don't, take another running start at that one.